Yet seeing him standing there still stopped me in my tracks for a second. Even though he'd made it clear he wanted nothing to do with me, I walked to the window and joined him. He nodded at me in acknowledgement and continued his conversation with the same miserable nurse who had just turned me away. Except now, Miss Miserable was smiling, and she apparently could get up from her chair. "Let me go back and check for you. The system still shows her in triage, but it's been a few hours. I'm sure they can give me an update. Just give me a minute." Brody turned to me while we waited.
"You just get here?"
"No. I was in the ladies' room. I came in the ambulance with her about 2 hours ago."
He nodded. "I just tried to call you. What did they find out so far?"
"I have no idea. They took her in and haven't given me an update yet." The nurse came back to the glass a few minutes later. She pointed to the right.
"I'll buzz you in. Why don't you come back?"
I followed Brody, even though I hadn't been invited. The nurse led us to an empty examining room and told us to take a seat. A few minutes later, a doctor came in. He peeled off one glove and extended his hand to Brody first.
"I'm Dr. Simon. You're Ms. Gardner's grandson?"
"I'm her legal guardian. Willow is her granddaughter."
The doctor shook my hand. Until that moment, I had no idea Brody was her legal guardian.
"Why don't we take a seat?"
I didn't like the sound of things so far. We both sat, my hands ringing as the doctor spoke.
"Mrs. Gardner has suffered a stroke. There are many different causes of strokes. We believe hers was a brain hemorrhage produced by an artery in the brain bursting."
"Oh my God." My hands flew to my mouth.
"Is she okay? Can it be treated? Fixed?" Brody asked. "She's having a CAT scan done now. That will tell us the location of the bleeding and the level of swelling. We'll know more after we pinpoint the extent of the damage and the size of the hematoma I suspect has formed. Right now, we're still working on stabilizing her blood pressure and breathing. We had to put her on a ventilator to help her breathe, and we're treating her with medicine in her IV to try to regulate her pressure."
"Then what? You perform surgery?"
The doctor looked at Brody, then at me, then back to Brody.
"Mrs. Gardner is very weak right now. I'm not ruling out anything. We will do everything we can to treat her, but right now, in the condition she's in, she wouldn't withstand cranial surgery."
If the gravity of the doctor's words hadn't told me how serious it was, I knew things were dire from Brody's actions. He reached over and covered my hands with his.
"She should be back from the CAT scan in a few minutes if you'd like to see her. Results should come back pretty quickly after that."
"We'd like to see her. Thank you."
The doctor stood.
"I'm sorry I don't have better news. Why don't you stay in here, and I'll have a nurse grab you when she's back."
The tiny room felt smaller with one less body. Brody ran his hands through his hair.
"You okay?"
"I think so." My delivery was less than convincing. It was hard to sound believable when you didn't even believe your own words. Two fingers slipped under my chin and tilted my head up.
"Let's not think the worst. We're going to think positive. That's what Marlene would be doing."
I stared out the hospital window, watching the sun slowly rise on the horizon. So simple, so magnificent. Yet I'd spent years not even noticing it or paying any attention. Even in my darkest hours, I'd counted on the sun rising the next morning. Not unlike the two people sleeping in the room. After a few minutes, I peeled my eyes away from the beauty outside and looked over at the rest of my world. The only things I'd ever known for sure in my life were that the sun would shine again and that these two would be there for me. Now nothing was certain except for that sunrise. Grams was sleeping, a dozen tubes connected to her, the sound of the ventilator sucking the air out of her lungs and hissing new life in, joined by the rhythmic beeping of her monitor. She'd made it through the night, which was more than the doctor initially thought would happen. Now it was a matter of time until they could repeat the CAT scan and see if the bleeding had stopped. My watery eyes fell on the man sleeping next to my grandmother. Brody had finally dozed off an hour or so ago, sitting up in a padded chair. I told him he could go, head home and get some rest for at least a few hours, and I would stay. But he never even considered it. Graham's had always been like family to him. After his mom died of cancer when he was only 7, Graham's had filled the matriarchal void in his life. She was always there for him, and he, in turn, had been the only reliable person in her life after Pop-Pop had died. Women had always loved Brody. With his undeniable good looks, physique of the professional athlete that he is, and stature as one of America's most admired quarterbacks, there wasn't much not to like. Add a heaping dose of confidence and the ability to make a woman feel like she was the only person in the room, and it was no wonder women literally chased after him. But the thing that makes him a man who was impossible to get over is exactly who he was right now. The most devoted person I've ever known. When the man loves, he loves hard. Nothing stood in his way. God, I would have given anything to have my old life back again. To turn back time so I could appreciate everything I had rather than throw it all away. I deserved to be the one sitting in that bed, not Graham's. I spent the next hour mindlessly fiddling with my necklace, watching the two people I cared about most in the world, and falling in love with them all over again. When Brody's eyes fluttered open and found me sitting across the room, our gazes locked for a long moment. I saw the moment he gave in. He might hate me down deep, but he was letting go of his anger. For now, at least.
"How is she?"
he asked. "The same."
"How long was I sleeping for?"
2 hours, maybe.
"You sleep at all?"
"Not yet." He stretched out in the chair, arms reaching up and neck going from side to side.
"Why don't you go home? Get some sleep. I'll call you if anything changes."
"I want to stay." It looked like he was going to say something, but then changed his mind. Instead, he just nodded.
"Still drink sugar with some coffee in it?"
He stood. "I do. Still drink it black and disgusting?"
He chuckled. "I'll go find us some."
Things between Brody and I relaxed a lot more after that. We weren't best friends again, but I also didn't feel like he was shooting an imaginary bow and arrow with my forehead as the target. "How long has she been in Broad Hollow Manor?"
"A little over 3 years."
I nodded. I had no idea how long it had been since I'd seen the two of them. Years of my life had been wasted and gone. The screwed-up thing was, now that I was sober, it felt like the world had stood still for me. I'd aged, but life had never progressed. It was as if I were picking up after pushing pause on my life for a long time. The thing was, my life had been the only thing paused. The world had gone on around me. Brody and I made small talk while we kept vigil. It was better than the silent treatment, although there were so many meaningful things I needed to say that I still didn't have the courage to speak. When the nurse came in a few hours later and asked us to step out for a little while so she could wash Graham's and take her vitals, Brody and I headed to the cafeteria to grab a bite to eat. We wandered into a gift shop first.
"You need anything?"
He had a baseball cap in his hand. "A toothbrush would be nice." The woman at the counter recognized Brody when she rung us up. Walking out of the store, he pulled on the cap, bringing the bill low on his face. "Disguise?"
Sort of.
Is it everything you thought it would be?
What?
Being famous.
When we were teenagers, we used to spend hours dreaming of what being a famous football player would be like. He glanced at me. Nothing turned out the way I thought it would.
We ordered 2 egg sandwiches from the cafeteria and sat down to eat. Brody finished his in what seemed like 3 bites. I ate only half of mine.
You're not going to eat that?
I smiled. Brody always had a ridiculous appetite. Wherever we went, both of our plates were wiped clean, but it was usually because Brody devoured everything on his plate, then attacked mine. Nope. Help yourself. He finished off my breakfast and guzzled his small black coffee. Do you remember when we went to that Oktoberfest during senior year, and you ate that guy's full plate of food because you thought it was mine?
Yeah. I almost got my ass kicked by Paul Bunyan in Lederhosen. That was the biggest person I've ever seen wearing overalls in my life.
We both laughed at the memory. We had snuck into a German festival, but only had 20 bucks between the two of us and were starving and unwilling to forego beer. So we each ordered an appetizer and the biggest mug of beer we could afford. Brody was off talking to some guys from the football team, and when he came back, I told him he could finish my appetizer while I headed to the bathroom. He proceeded to eat the entire $15 meal that was on the table. Only it was on the table next to where my leftover appetizer had been. We had one large, pissed-off German guy to contend with when he realized that his meal was gone. When we got back to Graham's room, the nurse was done, and a doctor came in a few minutes later. He told us that although her stats had stabilized from the medication, she wasn't trying to breathe on her own, and that wasn't a good sign. They would repeat the CAT scan in the early afternoon to determine the extent of the damage. Each doctor who stopped in felt compelled to warn us that things were not looking good. It was as if they were trying to prepare us for what the afternoon test would bring. Brody and I were both quiet for a while after the doctors left.
She has a healthcare proxy. I found the papers when I was cleaning out her things in the apartment. She and your grandfather had them drawn up years ago. I never tried to have a new one made, because my lawyer said her mental capacity would be an issue if we drew up any legal documents. So even though I'm her legal guardian now, her healthcare proxy was made when she was able to make her own decisions. And those decisions were her wishes.
What does that mean?
It means her medical decisions get made by the person who she wanted to make those decisions, not me.
And who is that? The answer was obvious, but I hoped I was wrong.
You.
Delilah. Chapter 29. I tried to reach Brody 3 times since the morning, but each call had gone straight to voicemail. I finally ended up sending him a text before Michael and I taped the spot with Peyton Mara. When we were done, the text still didn't show as delivered. I was growing concerned for so many different reasons.
"Everything okay?"
Michael asked on the way back to the airport. "Sorry, yes," I lied. Well, sort of. "I just don't like to fly. I get nervous for hours before."
It was the truth, but it wasn't what had me preoccupied today. "I think our seats are next to each other. My hand is available for holding, and squeezing, if you need."
I forced a smile. "Thank you. But usually I need more of a drool wiper than a hand holder." He glanced sidelong at me before his eyes returned to the road, so I explained, "I take a Xanax. It knocks me out pretty good. But it's either that or my heart might crack a few ribs pounding so hard to get out of my chest."
"Ah, drool wiping it is, then, even though I was looking forward to an excuse to hold your hand."
This trip had proven that Michael was the nice guy that I initially thought he was, not the bad guy Brody had warned me about. Although I was glad I hadn't gone out with him. Until Brody, I'd avoided anyone who might make my heart race. Letting anyone in other than Drew had felt like I was cheating. But somehow, Brody had wormed his way into my heart without my even seeing it happen. Michael and I had just cleared security when my phone buzzed in my jacket pocket. Brody's name flashed on the screen.
"Hey, I've been trying to reach you all day. Is everything okay?"
"Sorry. I was in the hospital, and my phone was off. I just turned it back on."
He sounded exhausted.
"It's fine. I was just getting worried. How's Marlene?"
"Not good. They're doing a repeat CAT scan now, so I'm heading to my place for a quick shower and change of clothes. She had a stroke."
"Oh, God. I'm sorry."
"Thanks. They're keeping her alive with machines right now. But they're not giving us much hope that the second scan is going to come back better than the first scan. She has bleeding in the brain, and she's not strong enough to survive surgery."
"I don't know what to say. What can I do?"
"There's nothing anyone can do. The doctors are doing everything they can, and they're still not sure it will be enough."
"I'm at the airport in Miami. My flight should land about 7. Will you be there all night?"
"Yeah. I'm probably going to stay again tonight. I have practice early tomorrow, and I already missed practice today. Not sure how things are going to go, but I want to stay as long as I can. Coach will find me, but he'll understand when I explain things in person."
"I'm available to bring up dinner or come sit with her so you can take a little break."
"Thank you. But I'm good for now, babe."
"I wish I would have had the chance to meet her before now. The way you talk about her, I know how much she means to you."
"Yeah, she's pretty great. More like family to me than most of my real family. They say blood is thicker than water, but that doesn't mean shit. Everyone needs water to live."
"That's a beautiful thought. You should tell her that, Brody. Even if her eyes aren't open, maybe she can hear you."
"You know what? You're right. There's a lot of shit I probably should have said to her before now."
"I'm sure she knows how you feel, but getting the words out might help both of you."
"Thanks, babe."
"I hope it turns out okay."
"Me too."
Normally, I would take half a pill before getting on a short flight. Instead, I took a full one. Aside from my regular pre-flight jitters, I was anxious to get back home, wanting to be there to support Brody if he needed me. Unfortunately, I'd soon find out that I wasn't the only one ready to console him.
Willow, Chapter 30. Lust. There's a reason that it's just a scramble of the letters that spell slut. I was literally sitting on my beloved grandmother's deathbed, and yet my heartbeat accelerated the minute Brody walked back into the room. Dressed in a pair of jeans and a fitted thermal, he turned the identity-shielding bill of his cap backward, and I had to force my gaping mouth closed. With his backward baseball cap and hair sticking out all over, he looked just like the jock I fell for.
"Anything?"
I shook my head. "They only brought her back a few minutes ago. There was a backup in CAT scan. The nurse said results would be backed up, too." He dug something from his pocket and extended his hand palm up, holding a swipe card of some kind.
"Your turn."
My forehead creased.
"My place is only 4 blocks away. You said you live all the way uptown. I picked up a t-shirt and those yoga pants you women wear in the hotel gift shop and left them in the bathroom for you, in case you want to change."
"The hotel gift shop?"
"I live at the Regency Hotel."
"You do?"
"Yeah, during the season. I stay in the cabin the rest of the year.
The cabin? You still have the cabin? Is it finished?
He smiled. I'm still working on it, but it's getting there.
The cabin upstate was the first major purchase Brody had made when he turned pro. The land was beautiful, but the place was a disaster. He'd wanted to rebuild it all himself. I'd only visited it once, but the memories had stayed with me. It was one of the last good weeks I'd had before I spiraled out of control this last time. We'd christened every room the week we were up there. One memory in particular replayed in my mind often. We had just made love in front of the fireplace that looked out at the lake, and we talked about spending the off-season there together, fixing the place up. He had told me he was going to build another fireplace in the bedroom because he loved the way my eyes looked in the fire's glow. Brody and I had a lot of memories, but that one, that time in front of the fireplace, I remember feeling utterly and completely loved.
Go. He snapped me back to the present. We're probably going to be here again tonight. Penthouse too.
You sure you don't mind?
I wouldn't offer if I did. Go. I got it here for a while. Besides, can't have you smelling up the place, can we? That's my job.
I'd never been in a penthouse before, but it basically looked like what I expected it to look like. Large, open, clean, and fancy. What it didn't look like was Brody's home. Some binders with the Steels logo rested on the end table in the living room. The dining room table held some mail and a folded jersey. But little else screamed that someone lived there for 4 months of the year. I wandered into the master bedroom. The spacious walk-in closet was filled with clothes and shoes. One whole side was practice jerseys, football pants, sweatshirts, and Under Armour. There had to be at least 20 pairs of sneakers and cleats lined up on that side of the closet. I opened a few of the built-in drawers. Everything was folded neat and tidy. Brody had always been more of a shove-it-in-a-drawer-and-make-it-fit kind of guy. Someone else was definitely putting away his laundry. The absence of any women's clothing in the closet made me think that someone was a maid rather than his girlfriend. Behind a dividing wall was a large master bath with a double sink and an enormous tiled shower. No fancy shampoos and conditioners, no perfumes or makeup. No sign of a woman spending frequent nights here. Although there were enough water jets and space in that shower to have a small party, it made me wonder if Brody entertained often. As I headed out of the master suite, I couldn't help myself. I was already overstepping boundaries by snooping. Might as well jump in with both feet. I slid open the bedside table. Inside was a set of Beats headphones, an iPod, some business cards, and a stack of folded papers. I moved some of the papers to the side, revealing a half-empty box of condoms and an almost empty bottle of lube. Well, that answered that question. I guess he did entertain often. There was another, smaller bathroom in the hallway. That one had the clothes Brody mentioned purchasing from the gift shop. Feeling even dirtier than I'd felt when I first came in, I took a quick shower and mentally scolded myself for violating Brody's trust when he had been so kind to me. Again. It was a full hour after I returned to the hospital when the doctor finally walked in. His face broke my heart before he even spoke. Brody had been sitting on the other side of Graham's bed and stood, so I did the same. I suddenly felt lightheaded, but I couldn't move to sit back down. My hand reached for my necklace. I had a nervous habit of playing with it whenever I was scared. Only it was missing. So I wrapped my hand around my throat and waited.
The results from the repeat scan are back.
The doctor paused and took a deep breath.
and I wish I had better news.
He looked at Brody and then at me.
Your grandmother suffered a massive stroke that affected the blood flow through the main middle cerebral artery. The blood was basically pooling in one area, causing the other side of her brain to be completely deprived of blood.
Was? Does that mean it stopped? I clung to the only potentially positive word that he spoke.
It's slowed, but the damage is extensive. The areas that were deprived of blood are swelling. The brain is encased by the walls of the bony skull, and the swelling is causing severe intracranial pressure. This pressure prevents blood from flowing, causing more damage, which in turn causes more swelling. It's a vicious cycle.
What can be done? Brody asked.
Well, the most effective way to treat massive brain swelling is a surgical procedure called a hemicraniectomy. We would remove a portion of the skull to allow the swelling to expand beyond the confines of the skull. But in your grandmother's case, it's highly unlikely that she would survive the procedure. As you know, we intubated to help her breathe when she came in. Unfortunately, her body isn't even trying to breathe on her own, and the reactiveness of her pupils has slowed. We'll continue to monitor her brain functions closely, but you need to prepare yourself for the worst. I'm sorry.
I think we were both numb. So many questions ran through my mind. Yet when the doctor asked if I had any, I just stared at him like I didn't speak the language. Eventually, he turned to Brody. The two of them talked quietly for a few minutes. I heard the sound of different voices, but the words didn't register. It was a feeling I was all too familiar with, the consummate fog of a drug-induced haze. A craving that had finally begun to subside in the last few months came barreling back with a vengeance. My hands gripped the arms of the chair, so it didn't knock me over. The doctor closed the door as he left, giving us privacy.
You okay?
Brody walked to me and kneeled down next to where I was sitting. No. He covered one of my hands with his.
It's a lot to take in, I know.
A laugh came out, as bitter as it tasted. You know what I'm sitting here thinking? After everything the doctor just said? I looked Brody in the eye, and he held my stare until I continued. That I want to get the hell out of here so I can go get high. My grandmother, who took me in and never gave up hope on me, is dying. And what do I want to do? Run away. As usual. Brody looked down for a long time. I figured he was trying to swallow the hatred he had for me. But when he spoke, he surprised me.
It's normal. You're scared, so you want to run.
I scoffed, hating myself. I must be scared a lot.
You know what, Willow? I think you are scared a lot. I'm no shrink. But people have two choices when they're scared, to run or to fight. You lived a rough life before, Marlene. Running was a survival instinct for you.
I stared at my lifeless grandmother. I don't want to run now. It's the least I can do.
So don't.
You say that like it's easy.
It's not. Nothing about this is easy.
I covered his hand with my other one and looked up at him. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll get through this. Just fight with me.
Brody had missed practice yesterday, so he had no choice but to go today. He was gone about 5 hours. The look on his face when he walked back into Marlene's room was one of total relief.
How is she?
He said. About the same.
He nodded. And you?
I'm fighting. Brody smiled and took off his jacket.
Glad to hear it.
How was practice?
Got knocked on my ass plenty.
Hard to focus? He ran his hand through his hair.
Yeah. My head wasn't in it today.
I was thinking while you were gone. We should put her game shows on tomorrow. Maybe even play the way we used to play with her. Maybe she can hear us, and that would make her happy.
That's a good idea. She'd like that. And I should call over to Broad Hollow Manor, let them know what's going on. Grouper would probably want to stop by and visit.
He seems like a nice guy.
He is. Just don't let him know I said that.
I laughed. Funny. He said the exact same thing about you.
Brody smiled. I knew the old bastard loved me.
Hours later, the doctor came back in. He told us to go get some sleep and come back in the morning. Tomorrow they would rerun the scan, and then we would likely have some big decisions to make. I couldn't even think about tomorrow yet. Around midnight, we decided to go home for a few hours.
Come on. I'll give you a ride. My car is in the lot across the street since I came straight from practice.
I wasn't even going to pretend to put up an argument. The last 2 days had caught up with me, and lifting my arm to open a door felt like an effort. Brody's car was a Range Rover with an interior of supple leather and wood. This is much better than the Bronco, I teased, referring to the 1981 red and white striped jalopy he drove throughout high school and college. He smiled,
just a little.
Although that Bronco held a lot of good memories. I glanced into the back seat of his fancy new car, thinking of the endless hours we had spent fooling around in the wide back seat. Brody caught my glance, and our eyes met for a brief second. Neither of us said another word the rest of the way uptown, except when I needed to give directions. Pulling up to my apartment, I was a little embarrassed. The building was in a bad neighborhood. Proof of that was hanging out right at the front door. Two guys who screamed drug dealers watched as we pulled to the curb and stopped.
This is where you live?
Yeah. It's what I can afford. I'm hoping to move soon, though. Brody started to say something, then stopped. Thank you for the ride. For everything.
You're welcome.
I made it halfway to the door when Brody called after me,
Willow?
He jogged to catch up to me.
Stay at the hotel I'm staying at. At least tonight. I'll get you a room.
That's sweet of you, but I'm fine. Really, I am.
I wasn't worried about you.
He lied right through his teeth.
It would help me sleep better tonight, knowing you weren't...
He looked around, his thoughts evident without having to voice them. I'll get my stuff. Delilah, Chapter 31. I set my alarm for 6, even though I hadn't really decided if I was going to go or not. After a quick shower, I grabbed my phone from the charger and scanned our texts from last night again.
Brody. Not good.
Delilah, I'm sorry. Anything I can do?
Brody, a naked picture might help.
Delilah, LOL. Glad to see you sound more like yourself now. This afternoon when we spoke, there wasn't one sexual innuendo. I was worried.
Brody, me too.
Delilah, you staying at the hospital tonight? I remembered typing that last text and then editing out one word. The initial text read, "You staying at the hospital tonight alone?" But immediately afterward, I felt selfish and was glad I hadn't sent it. He was going through a horrible time, and my jealousy had no place.
Brody. No. Heading back to Regency soon. I'll be back for visiting hours in the morning at 9.
Delilah. Okay. Hope you get some sleep.
Brody. Call me in the morning. I'll set an alarm for 7:30 so you can talk dirty to me before I shower.
My mind was busy debating whether I should or shouldn't as I dried my hair and got my clothes ready. Slipping on an expensive bra and panty set that I'd splurged on last week, I realized my head was bullshitting itself. Who was I kidding? I'd shaved my legs and donned new sexy underwear. I had already mentally decided I was surprising Brody with an in-person wake-up call, even before I admitted it to myself. Luckily for me, the uniformed elevator operator remembered seeing me with Brody. So when I explained with a blush that I wanted to surprise my boyfriend, he slipped the key into the slot with a sly grin. It was a good thing, because I had completely forgotten access to the penthouse floor required a special key. There was really no reason for me to be nervous, yet there I was, standing in front of Brody's suite, a bag of his favorite pumpkin spice muffins in one hand, and coffees in a cardboard carrier in the other, and I was anxious about knocking unannounced. I took a deep breath, raised my knuckles, and rapped on the door marked PH2. No response. Pulling out my phone, I checked the time. 7:33. Maybe he was sleeping still, or in the shower, or had decided to leave early. I knocked one more time. The second time louder than the first. I had just started to turn away when I heard the sound of feet walking toward the door. Brody answered, wearing only tight black boxer briefs. He had a toothbrush in his mouth, and his hair was a sexy mess. His foaming mouth turned to a smile. I held up the bag of muffins. "I brought you breakfast." His eyes swept me from head to toe, making me feel deliciously violated. "You certainly did." I was very glad I'd changed my outfit four times and decided on something a bit on the sexy side. He stepped aside, holding his arm out for me to enter.
"Ladies first."
I handed him the coffees as I passed. "Ladies first" is just the Brody Easton way of saying, "Let me check out your ass."
"You know it."
He chuckled and disappeared into the bathroom, coming back after he had finished his teeth. "I thought maybe you could use a happy wake-up call and something to eat." Brody took the bag from my hand and tossed it over his shoulder before wrapping his arms around my waist and tugging me close.
"That's perfect. I'm fucking starving."
"What are you doing?" He walked me backward until the backs of my knees hit the couch.
"I'm going to eat."
He gave me a gentle but firm shove, so I fell back, landing on the couch. Looking up at him, my eyes stared at his beautiful face, but I was quickly distracted. Trailing down his broad shoulders, across his muscular pecs and abs, my gaze landed on his glorious carved V. That indentation could seriously make me forget my name.
"You look hungry, too."
He smirked, catching me ogling him. "God, you wake up looking like that. Your body really is ridiculously incredible." He rubbed his bulging erection through his tight underwear. Watching him touch himself made me clench my thighs together.
"I'm glad you like it. But I want to see more of yours. Pull up that skirt."
I hesitated for a brief second. I'd only just walked in the door, and daylight was shining in through the living room windows. But I'd come here hoping to bring him some happiness in the midst of a couple of tough days. Plus, look at that V. I reached down to the bottom of my skirt and gathered it, letting it bunch around my hips. I would look like a wrinkled mess at the office later, but I knew when Brody was done with me, I wasn't going to care in the slightest.
"These are in the way."
He reached down, and with one quick tug, tore off my brand new panties. Before I could retort that I would have taken them off, he dropped to his knees and buried his face between my legs. Oh, God. He devoured me, licking and sucking, his hands gripping my hips to hold me in place when I started to wiggle around. I need to move. But the more I bucked, the harder he held me down, and the more aggressive his tongue lashed out at me. It was frustrating. I needed to gyrate my hips to meet his rhythm. Realizing I wasn't going to get anywhere pinned by his strength, I dug my fingers into his hair, attempting to take some control back. He chuckled when I pulled his hair to move his head slightly up, but took the hint and shifted his focus to my aching clit. Alternating between fluttering and sucking, he brought me to orgasm. I had been inside of his apartment less than 10 minutes. He carried me to his bed after that, and we had sex. Good sex. No, great sex. The kind where he searched my face as he glided in and out of my body with smooth strokes, and then, when my eyes fluttered open, our gazes met, and he smiled down at me, breathless and beautiful. Afterward, he pushed the hair off my face as we both lay on our sides facing each other. "Thank you for giving me that." I grinned. "Thank you for giving me that." He laughed. "You know what I meant. For letting me get lost in you for a little while. And not complaining when I basically attacked you as you walked through the door." Complain? Was he crazy? I can think of worse ways to be greeted. He kissed my lips gently. "Today is going to suck." I propped my head up on my elbow to listen. "They're warming us up to the idea of removing all the tubes and letting her go peacefully. I just know it."
"I'm so sorry. That's such a hard decision for you to make."
"I'm not the one who's going to need to make it."
"I thought you were her legal guardian."
"I am. But she signed a healthcare proxy years ago, before she started to show any signs of dementia."
"Oh. Who makes her healthcare decisions, then?"
"Willow."
That only made sense. "Has she been handling things okay?"
"She's upset. But holding her own right now. I'm not sure she would ever come back from this one if she disappeared on Marlene now."
I nodded. "How long has she been clean?"
"She says 11 months.
"Do you believe her?"
"I think so. She seems more like the Willow I knew than she has in a long time."
An uneasy feeling settled in. The Willow he knew was the Willow he fell in love with. If Drew wasn't gone and walked back into my life tomorrow, what would I do with a second chance? We stayed in bed for a little while longer. I pushed whatever immature jealousy I had aside. "Tell me about her."
"Marlene? She's tough as nails and soft at the same time. She did nice things for people, but never wanted anyone to know she did them."
"My father used to say altruism was spelled wrong. It was spelled A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S.
That's how Marlene lived. When Willow was on one of her binges, she used to frequent this squatter's den in Bushwick. It was a real hellhole, no heat or running water. Yet a handful of addicts actually called it home. One snowy January, Marlene insisted on coming with me to look for Willow. When we went inside, the place was freezing. Most of the people who were passed out had newspapers piled on top of them for warmth. We took Willow home, and a few days later, I was back there to drag her ass out again. Only I went without telling Marlene the second time. When I walked inside, everyone had a coat on. They were all wearing Marlene's coats. She had went back the next day without telling me, and gave away all her coats."
"Wow. She sounds like a beautiful person."
"She is. It killed her to go to those places, too.
She had to watch her granddaughter follow in her daughter's footsteps. I'm glad she got to see Willow sober for a few weeks before this happened.
I am, too.
We talked about Marlene until I was going to be late for work.
I need to wash up and get to the office.
Take a shower with me.
I'm already running late, and you wanted to get to the hospital when visiting hours started. Showering together is definitely not a good idea.
You're probably right.
I'm just going to throw my hair up and jump in the shower to wash off. I'll use the guest bathroom.
Brody pouted. I like you with my scent all over you.
I took a quick shower and was just about to step out when something shiny near the drain caught my eye. At first, I thought it was a coin. But when I bent over to pick it up, I realized it was a necklace caught around the grate. I untangled it, and when I lifted it, a pendant fell to the floor. A pendant in the shape of the letter W. I was already dressed when Brody got out of the shower in the master bath.
You're done quickly,
he snickered.
And that wasn't the first time today.
I was inwardly freaking out, but somehow managed to deliver my words calmly. Holding out my palm, I offered the necklace. This was in the shower. It almost washed down, but the clasp was caught on the drain cover. He furrowed his brow and picked the necklace up, the W dangling between us. Symbolic. His eyes closed for a moment and then rose to look at me.
It must be Willow's.
I held his stare but said nothing.
She showered here yesterday. She must have dropped it.
She was here?
Yes, but by herself. I came home and took a shower. Then when I went back to the hospital, I gave her my key and told her to use my place to shower. She lives all the way uptown, and we wanted to be there when the doctors came around.
I nodded. Then I walked to my purse and fished out my phone, checking it quickly for no reason other than I needed to focus on something else. Brody just stood there and watched me. When I put on my coat and remained quiet, he spoke again.
Are you upset with me for doing that?
Should I be?
He ran his fingers through his hair. I really didn't think about it. It just seemed like the right thing to do. But now that we're standing here, I'm thinking maybe it wasn't.
How would you feel if I let Michael Langley shower at my house?
Brody's jaw clenched.
And didn't mention it to you?
Point taken.
I have to get to work.
Brody reached out and stopped me from passing, pulling me in close for a hug. I'm sorry, he whispered in my ear. Forgive me. I should have thought about it more than I did. I don't want you mad at me.
I pulled my head back to look him in the eyes. Nothing else happened? She was here alone, showering?
Nothing, I swear.
I thought about it for a minute. Okay.
He blew out a long breath of air. Thank God. I don't think I could handle you being mad at me today.
I forced a smile, remembering what the last few days had been like for him. With or without Willow in the picture, the man loved Marlene. It couldn't be easy. I'm not mad. Text me from the hospital. Let me know what the doctors say this morning.
Thanks, babe.
In truth, I wasn't lying. I really wasn't mad. Nervous, jealous, scared, maybe. Strangely, I was dating a former player who'd never tried to hide that relationships weren't his forte, yet I believed him when he said nothing else had happened. What worried me was that he was opening his heart to Willow again, more than his home. Stepping out of the elevator, I bumped straight into a man who was waiting to enter, never even seeing him until my foot was on top of his.
He fumbled before catching the coffee he was holding, but not before a splash of it hit his crisp white dress shirt. I apologized profusely and attempted to make it the rest of the way out of the lobby unscathed. I almost made it, too, until my collision with the glass turnstile exit. My face actually smacked into the bright yellow out-of-order sign with the big arrow pointing to another door. That accident wasn't my fault. I was paying attention as I walked. The problem was that my attention was on the beautiful woman sitting in the lobby, staring at me, and not on the electric door that wasn't working. Willow.
Brody, Chapter 32. Football players were supposed to be tough. 10 350-pound men piled on, kicking and scratching, elbowing and clawing, to get at the lone guy holding a scrap of leather. I'd been the guy on the bottom of the pile 100 times. We got back up, brushed the dirt from our eyelashes, discreetly straightened a dislocated thumb, and jumped back into the action for another round. But tough had its limits. Even a diamond, if you hit it at the exact right place, the spot where it was flawed and weak, would sometimes shatter. Marlene was my weak spot. Willow cried while the doctor spoke. She didn't make it past no functional brain activity. Silent tears fell as he continued on about our choices, one worse than the other. But I held strong, even thanked him before he left, saying he would come back later that afternoon to discuss our decision. When I closed the door behind him, there was just enough time to catch Willow before she fell. She crumpled in my arms, her shoulders shaking, body trembling, sobs racking her body. The croak in her howl revealed her physical pain. I held tighter. Hours later, she was better, patched back up as best I could. Hell, she'd even laughed a few times in the last hour as we played Wheel of Fortune, one of us on either side of Marlene as we wrote down our guesses. The last puzzle had most definitely been a mood changer. Category, thing. Blank, U-C-K. Blank, E. In the, A, blank, blank. Tonight. Really? Only one of us had gotten luck be in the air tonight, and it definitely wasn't me. After a good laugh, Willow went down to the cafeteria to grab us some lunch. An aide came in and changed Marlene's pillows and refreshed the pink plastic pitcher with new water. She straightened up a bit and nodded before she left. Busying myself, I noticed she had left the bedside drawer open just a little, so I walked over to shut it. But for some reason, I opened it first. Inside was only one thing. Marlene's powder blue denture case. They had taken her teeth out when they put the breathing tube down her throat. I stared at it. I had no idea why. It was certainly a random enough thing to set me off, but seeing that case made me lose it. I bawled like a bitch. It had been years since I cried. When I heard the door open behind me, I was still standing in front of the open drawer. I shut it, leaned down, kissed Marlene on the forehead, and went to the bathroom without turning around for Willow to see my face. This morning with Delilah felt like days ago. Between emotions running high and a day of marathon game shows, I hadn't texted her an update all day. I dug my phone out of my pocket and powered it on. Brody, still at the hospital, leaving soon for practice. Coming back here tonight after. Doctors are going to turn off the ventilator at 9. Delilah. That's good, right? Brody. No. Delilah. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I thought you meant there was an improvement. Brody. It's what she would have wanted. Delilah. I'm glad you know that, and I hope that brings you some peace. Brody. Breakfast tomorrow, maybe? Our texts were flowing fast, but there was a long pause before her next response. Delilah. I actually have a breakfast meeting I can't miss. Lunch, maybe? Brody. Okay. Delilah. Call me whenever you need tonight. The time doesn't matter. I'll be thinking of you. That night, Willow and I took turns saying goodbye to Marlene before the doctor came in. I don't remember saying goodbye to my mother. I was too young when she died. But I imagined it felt an awful lot like saying those last words to Marlene did. I looked down at her frail body. There are so many things you taught me over the years. To never give up. To love someone worth loving, flaws and all. Hell, I can say someone isn't all there in their head 1,001 ways because of you. But you also taught me the one thing I need most right now. When life knocks you down, stop and look around for one thing that's good, because there is always something. Then cling to that good. I kissed her forehead one last time and covered her hand with mine. Here's the good I'm holding on to today. I'm lucky to have known someone who was so hard to say goodbye to. I couldn't possibly have hidden my tears from anyone that time. Not long after we said our goodbyes, the doctor removed the breathing and feeding tubes and turned off all of the monitors. I didn't know what I'd expected, but she simply stopped breathing. Marlene Elizabeth Garner died at 1:03 a.m.
Willow, Chapter 33. Life is filled with a series of tethers. Imaginary threads that connect us to people from the moment we're cut from our mother's cord. I'd spent the first 25 years of my life trying to cut those threads and fly high, out of reach. It wasn't until 11 months ago that I woke up one morning and realized those tethers weren't chains that were keeping me down. They were lifelines, and my threads were so frayed, there were virtually no lines left to my life. Last night, or maybe it was actually today, I wasn't even sure anymore, since one day had blurred into the next. The strongest thread that had ever existed in my life was cut away. Brody handled all of the plans. Tonight, we would have a small service at my grandmother's church. Tomorrow, we would drive to the cemetery and lay her to rest. And then, I didn't know what came after that. I only knew I didn't want to lose Brody again. I dressed in a simple black dress. It was a summer dress, and the air outside had the chill of late fall, but a sweater was going to have to make do since I didn't have money for shopping. Brody knocked on my door right on time. I had told him I would meet him downstairs, explained that parking was difficult to find. But the reality was, I hadn't wanted him to see where I was living. "You didn't have to come up?" I hadn't put my heels on yet, so he was almost a foot taller than me. I saw him look over my head and scan my apartment. I knew what he was doing, and I certainly couldn't blame him. I opened the door wide and stepped aside. "No drugs, I'm clean."
"I wasn't."
I arched my eyebrow as if to say, "Yes, you were," and he confessed with a grin.
"All right, maybe I was."
He came inside. "Let me give you a tour." I twirled a circle with my arms extended. "You could tour my entire studio apartment, except the bathroom, in one pivot. Tour over. So, how do you like it?"
"I like it. It's warm."
"It's not really. You better keep your jacket on."
"It's yours, right?"
"You're really taking this find one good thing to heart, aren't you?" I teased.
"I am."
"Just give me 1 minute. I'm searching for my black heels." My apartment was small, but the ceilings were high. Typical for Manhattan,